everybody. Welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we're going to continue reading from the NALC Constitution. We are up to Article 10, which is the removal of officers. This is how we hold those people accountable. This is how we hold ourselves accountable. All right, here we go. Article 10, removal of officers. In case of neglect of duty or violation of this Constitution on the part of any officer of this association or state association, the Executive Council shall have power to remove them from office, impose such other penalty as it may deem proper, or suspend such state association after a fair hearing, subject to appeal to the National Convention. Before we go on, this is again from the National Constitution. This is the removal of national officers. But it does say any officer of this association, so this may be broadly applicable. Any subordinate constitutions or bylaws have to be in accordance and can't be in conflict with the NALC Constitution. So these rules, I would imagine, are generally applicable, but there are more specific rules, like maybe for within your own branch, that we'll get to down the road. All right. Any member may file with the Executive Council a charge that an officer of the National Association or a state association has been guilty of neglect of duty or violation of this Constitution. Okay, so this is about national-level officers, I think. All right, anyway, moving on. Upon the filing of such charge, the President or Vice President or the Secretary-Treasurer, if the charge is against both the President and Vice President, shall, as soon as practicable, A, send by registered... Okay, this is definitely about officers at the national level. A, send by registered mail a copy of the charges to the officer or officers charged, and B, appoint a member who is not involved in the charge to investigate the same and to make a report in writing within 30 days to the Executive Council on the results of their findings. This would be like the Weir report in the charges against Renfro. A copy of such report shall be sent by mail to the charging member and to the officer against whom the charge was filed. The Executive Council shall determine whether a substantial charge is presented by the report and, if so, shall direct a hearing thereon before a panel of three disinterested members, excluding the investigator. The panel shall make a report with recommendations to the Executive Council, which shall be served on the accused officer and charging member, who may, within 15 days, file with the Executive Council objections or comments thereon. If the Executive Council finds the officer guilty, it shall be empowered to remove them from office or impose such other penalty as it may deem proper. Any member aggrieved by such decision of the Executive Council shall have the right to appeal to the National Convention. So all this stuff came up at the last National Convention because there were the charges which were investigated in the Weir Report. And then there was the investigation, the three-party investigation, which I think was the Weiner Report. And then it went before the Executive Council, which voted not guilty on all of the charges except drunk driving. And then they imposed their penalty. At the end of the paragraph here, any member aggrieved by such decision of the Executive Council shall have the right to appeal to the National Convention. So the shithouse lawyers, as they were referred to, and we've been wearing that as a honorific since that time. So anyway, the shithouse lawyers felt that any member aggrieved means any member, and they were certainly aggrieved by this lack of accountability for our president, and so they brought it to they appealed to the National Convention. The president made a ruling that, no, you can't appeal this to the National Convention, and the National Convention overruled him, which was a cool moment, because the National Convention is the ultimate authority in our union. Okay, so moving on. To perfect such appeal to the National Convention, the aggrieved member must, no later than 60 days prior to the National Convention, file with the chairperson of the Executive Council by registered mail notice of appeal, together with a full written statement of the reasons why the appeal should be granted. If the adverse decision of the Executive Council is not rendered until 65 days or less prior to the National Convention, the notice to appeal and statement of reasons must be filed as soon after the receipt of the decision as is reasonably possible. And that's it. That's the whole process for removing national level officers. Now we move on to Article 11, committees. What good is an organization without committees? This could have been an email. All right. Anyway, building trustees. Section 1, the national president, the national secretary treasurer, and the chairperson of the board of trustees shall constitute the building trustees. The building trustees shall have supervision over the operation and maintenance of the NALC building. They shall have the authority to appoint a building manager to whom they may delegate such power as they may deem advisable. They shall have control over all physical and financial assets, properly invest funds when such funds are available, maintain necessary records, submit for approval a monthly report to the Executive Council, and a biennial report to the National Convention. As building trustees, they shall serve without compensation. So here's another one of those reports that went to the National Convention, and dude, I don't know where these reports are. I wonder if they're in the members-only portion of the NALC website. Oh, dude, and on that note, I got a correction from the last Constitution episode. I talked about Brian Renfro getting a raise while none of us got raises, and it turns out that that's a bit of misinformation. As near as I could figure out, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong about this, the people who were saying that Renfro got this significant raise were basing that on the LM3 or whatever reports that get filed with the Department of Labor. And it showed Renfro's salary in like 2022, and then it showed his salary in 2023, and it took this big jump. Well, in that time, he went from being vice president to being president. And so, of course, his salary went up. So as I understand it, that's the explanation for his pay increase, and that he has not gotten a pay increase over the period of time that we have gotten a pay increase, except the one from his promotion. So let the record be straight, and dude, if I'm wrong about that one too, then by all means, let me know, classesofmail@gmail.com. All right, moving on. So speaking of money, the Fiscal Committee. Section 2A, the resident national officers shall constitute the Fiscal Committee. Any three of the resident officers may serve as members of the Fiscal Committee. B, it shall be the duty of the Fiscal Committee to examine all bills submitted for payment and, if found to be correct, to approve them and authorize payment to be made. All bills shall be itemized. Any disapproved bills will be returned by the Secretary-Treasurer, who will furnish the reasons for disapproval. Next, Committee of Laws. Section 3. The President shall appoint three members of the Executive Council who shall be the Committee of Laws. The proposed bylaws of all subordinate branches and state associations, except those fixing the time and place of meetings and the amount of initiation fees, dues, and reinstatement fees, shall be submitted for approval by this committee. If they do not conflict with the Constitution or laws of this association, such bylaws shall be approved. Bylaws and subsequent alterations or amendments made thereto shall not take effect until so approved. The Committee of Law shall keep a record of date of approval of any bylaws or amendments or alterations to bylaws, together with the name and number of the branch or state association submitting the same, and shall make a full report thereof at the biennial meeting of the National Association. Let's assume that that committee report is available somewhere, and I just don't know where it is. In fairness to the committees, I haven't looked very hard for it. But speaking of the Committee of Laws, so I have been on this quest to get the accurate and up-to-date bylaws for my branch. Interestingly, in our branch bylaws, it requires, I know I've talked about this in other episodes, but it can't come up here. It's come up here. In our bylaws, it requires the bylaws to be given to every member, including every new member. And I know for a fact this isn't being done, because when I asked for the bylaws, it was quite a process for me to get them. And if the bylaws were readily available to be handed out, then they would just hand me the bylaws. And so I got these bylaws, but then it turned out that the bylaws that I was given were out of date. And they showed information about the pay of our officers that was inaccurate. Like, it showed that our officers were all being paid at NALC Step O, And they don't get paid at step O. They get paid at the top step, which is now step P. And so it looks like our officers are being paid improperly. Well, it turns out that, as is laid out in the Committee of Laws, our branch approved an amendment to our bylaws that updated so where anywhere that it said step O, now it just says like top level pay. And so now we have new bylaws that have that incorporated. The problem is those amendments were never actually incorporated into our bylaws. So when I sent an email asking like, hey, this doesn't seem right, and I don't think this is up to date, the only thing that my branch had to send me, had available to send me, was this letter from the Committee of Law saying, okay, your changes are approved about your pay. And that means that no current copy exists of our bylaws as they currently exist. And so there's no way that our branch is complying with the bylaw that says that they're supposed to hand out the bylaws, because the bylaws don't even fucking exist. Good times. Good times. All right, moving on. Committee on Appeals, Section 4A. The Vice President, Secretary Treasurer, and Chairperson of the Board of Trustees shall constitute the Committee on Appeals. They shall examine all appeals and grievances that may arise in the National Association, and all appeals and grievances that may be taken from a state association, or from a branch to the National Association, or between individual members thereof, except those involving questions of law upon which the National President has ruled, and may be referred to, as may be referred to them in accordance with the laws of this association. They shall notify the appropriate branches, state associations, the appellant, and the president of their decision. They shall make a written report summarizing their activities at each national convention. Now, this one I think I've seen before, that it was rulings by the president, and they answer some really good questions about, like, how is X supposed to work, and what's the procedure for Y, and what do we do in this situation? And there are, like, some good in-depth questions that have rulings on them, and that stuff is fascinating. B, any determination of the Committee on Appeals can be appealed by any aggrieved member, branch, or state association to the National Convention. To perfect such appeal, the aggrieved member, branch, or state association must, no later than 60 days prior to the National Convention, file with the Committee on Appeals by registered mail a notice of appeal, together with a full written statement of the reasons why the appeal should be granted. If the decision of the Committee on Appeals is not rendered until 65 days or less prior to the National Convention, the notice of appeal and statement of reasons must be filed as soon after the receipt of the decision as is reasonably possible. So if you stayed till the very end of the convention this year in Boston, these appeals were heard at the national level. I don't think any of them were sustained. I might be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure that that all the appeals fell short. Next, Committee on Credentials. Section 5, the Committee on Credentials shall examine the credentials of all delegates to the National Convention or special meeting of this association, and make the report as soon as the convention or meeting has opened and they have passed upon all the credentials that have been presented to them, with supplemental reports being made in the case of tardy delegates. They shall have the right to call for all papers in the possession of any officer or members of or member of this association when a protest is under consideration. They shall report all protests together with their decision to the convention. Next, Committee on Mileage and Per Diem, Section 6. The Committee on Mileage and Per Diem shall compute and report to the National Convention the name, residence, and amount due each member eligible for mileage and per diem. So this is one where I'm curious how this works. Like, does this committee, well, it says, report to the convention the name, residence, and amount due each member eligible for mileage and per diem. So how far does that eligibility go? Like, if I'm a local branch officer and I'm doing stuff that, you know, I'm traveling on my branch's dime, I get mileage, I get a per diem. Is that reported to this committee and this committee makes the report to the National Convention? I don't know. And, dude, for that matter, they're reporting to the National Convention the name, residence, and amount due. Like, are they giving out everybody's address? Dude, there are inner workings to this union that I mean, that's the point of reading this Constitution, right? Is to learn about this stuff. And yeah, I wonder what form the report of this committee takes and how deep down the rabbit hole it goes. Is this only for people at officers at the national level? I don't know. And their residence, is it just their state, their county? Is it their home address? I don't know. I went to the national convention. I don't remember seeing these reports. Dude, for reals, if you're listening and you know where to get these reports, I just haven't gone looking for them. But if you know where to get these reports, please let me know. I'm very curious to see a lot of these reports. Classesofmail@gmail.com. All right, moving on. Convention Committee. This is the last one. Section 7. The national president shall appoint a committee to study and explore the feasibility of future convention cities desiring to be the host city. A report of the committee's finding, including whether or not the city is located in a right-to-work state, must be submitted to the Executive Council for its consideration. Section 8. All formal actions by the standing committees between conventions shall be in writing, signed by a majority, and shall be reported to the president and secretary-treasurer. So at Branch 2502, where I work, where I'm a member, our president, who died in January of this year, was a member of this convention committee. And he would travel with a few other people, Howard Comine, and they would go to different cities to see about having the convention there. And at the end of the convention in Boston, there was a really nice video and a touching tribute to Glenn, who is the president who died, by the other members of the committee. It was a really, really nice moment. All right, moving on. Article 12, resolutions. This is a short one. Resolutions. Any branch in good standing or any state association may at any time forward to the National Secretary-Treasurer resolutions properly attested by their president and secretary-treasurer for consideration by the appropriate union authority. Such resolutions must be in duplicate, and each shall be on a separate sheet of paper. This is the kind of stuff that Tyler Vassar had to do to get his open bargaining resolutions to the National Convention. All right, moving on. Resolutions pertaining to the National Working Agreement, which should, insofar as possible, identify the article and section to be changed, shall be forwarded to the chief spokesperson of the NALC negotiating team. Those pertaining to legislation shall be forwarded to the NALC Director of Legislation, and all others shall be forwarded to the NALC Executive Council for their consideration and appropriate action. Those appropriate authorities shall report to the National Convention on all such resolutions and the action taken thereon. So that's where these resolutions get their recommendation by the Executive Council, where it says the Executive Council recommends disapproval for this resolution, or they recommend approval for this resolution, and then we vote on whether to sustain their recommendation, which I still contend is an awkward way to do it, that we should just take their advice, and their advice is separate, and we should either vote yay or nay on the resolution. Maybe I'll make a resolution to that effect, just to simplify the voting. If we could have that done by the LA convention, that might catch on. All right, next we go to Article 13, mileage and per diem. Section 1, the National Association shall pay mileage to the President, Executive Vice President, Secretary Treasurer, Assistant Secretary Treasurer, Director of City Delivery, Director of Safety and Health, Director of Retired Members, Director of Life Insurance, Director of Health Benefits, National Business Agents, and Board of Trustees. Section 2, per diem shall be paid to each officer as the National Association, while in session, may direct. All right, so this is probably the per diem and mileage that gets reported by the committee that was created in Article 11. This is probably the specific people that refers to. Next, Article 14, prohibitions. Prohibitions. Section 1. Any branch or any member of a branch who shall cause to have introduced or endeavor to have passed in Congress any measures relating to legislation for letter carriers which can be proven beyond a reasonable doubt to be detrimental to the members of this association shall have charges proffered against them. No, shall have charges preferred against such branch or member. And if proven guilty, such branch or member, as the case may be, shall be expelled. So don't be bringing up introducing legislation that hurts the association. Dude, come on. All right. The National Association of Letter Carriers, State Association, branch, or member shall make no law or rule in violation of Title I of the Labor Management Reporting and Disclosure Act of 1959. Section 2. No state association or branch of the NALC shall take any action binding themselves to any other organization by affiliation or otherwise until the character and objects of this other body shall have been endorsed at a convention of the NALC or passed upon favorably by a majority of the Executive Council. Section 3. No state association or branch of the NALC or officer or member of the association shall take any action or make any statement whose purpose is to destroy the NALC, encourage a rival to it, or bring about a violation of its legal or contractual obligations. Dude, that's intense. Dude, purpose is to destroy the NALC. You know, wow. It's hard to even comprehend like what that would be. But all right, moving on. We're probably all pretty safe from that provision. Section 4, no national, state, or branch officer or member or group of members acting individually or in concert shall call a strike or other work stoppage unless and until such action has been approved by the NALC Executive Council and or the NALC National President. Interestingly, on this note, when our contract is finally presented for ratification, if we vote no, then it goes back to the president. I think we read about this earlier in the Constitution. It goes back to the president. They have to renegotiate, and there's like a short window of time that they have to present another tentative agreement. And then we vote on that. If we vote no on that one, or if the agreement's not reached, then there's a possibility that our president can order a work stoppage. That would be pretty wild. Section 5. No full-time national officer shall hold any office in any subordinate branch or state association. Section 6, no full-time elected or appointed national officer shall receive more than one salary from the NALC. Now that seems reasonable. Like if you're already your state or your local branch president and then you take a national job, you don't keep getting paid by your local branch. You just get whatever you get for your new job. Next, Article 15. Bylaws of branches and state associations. Each branch or state association may make, alter, or rescind such bylaws, rules, and regulations from time to time as may be deemed most expedient, providing they do not in any way conflict with this Constitution. Bylaws of branches may be amended at any regular meeting of the branch, provided the amendment has been submitted in writing at the last previous regular branch meeting, and suitable notification to members shall be made at least 10 days before the regular meeting at which the vote is to be taken. Bylaws and amendments thereto, fixing the amount of initiation fees, dues, and reinstatement fees, or the time and place of meeting, shall become effective at the time determined by the branch or state association. All other bylaws must be submitted in duplicate to the chairperson of the Committee of Laws and shall not become effective until approved by the Committee of Laws, as provided in Article 11, Section 3 of this Constitution. So for my own branch, there are definitely some bylaws that I am interested in changing. There's some that just aren't super clear. There's some that need updating. Like one is in our elections section. It says no person may be nominated for more than one position notification requirements. And I think the word notification requirements at the end of that, you know, I'm actually going to read it because you need to hear that. All right, this is from Section 3C of our election procedures. It says, C, No person can accept nomination for more than one office notification requirements. What does that mean? Like, the sentence, no person can accept nomination for more than one office, that makes sense. If you get nominated for vice president, like I will be, then I can't also be nominated for secretary. You know, okay, that makes sense. But I can't be nominated for more than one office notification requirements. Dude, I really think that that was like a copy and paste error, and it's just an error. The word notification requirements adds nothing to that sentence. I don't know what that means. And so I think it's just a mistake, and I think we should change it in our bylaws and just have that removed. So at some point I will make that proposal, but we have our election nominations coming up next month. And so now is not the time, but the time is a coming. All right. So moving on, Article 16, collective bargaining. Yeah, these are all getting fairly short. All right, here we go. Article 16, collective bargaining. Section 1, every member, by becoming or remaining a member of the association, appoints the association as their exclusive bargaining representative for purposes of entering into collective bargaining agreements with their employer and for the resolution of any grievances or claims arising under such agreement. Each member agrees not to bring any action against the association or any officer or representative thereof for any act or omission by it in the exercise of its responsibility as their exclusive bargaining representative, provided that such suit may be brought against the association or an officer or representative if the association or that officer or representative has been guilty of a deliberate breach of trust injuring the suing member. The president shall appoint. So this is a common way that organizations protect themselves. By being in the organization, you agree that you can't sue the organization. These sorts of provisions don't take legal advice from me. Never mind. I'm gonna let that stand as is, and we're gonna move on. The president shall appoint a ballot committee composed of 15 members from branches in not less than 15 states. 15 members from branches in not less than 15 states. Well, it can't be more than 15 states because there's only 15 members, so it has to be exactly 15 states. And that's an interesting way to word that. Ratification shall be a mail referendum vote, and the ballot shall be mailed only to regular members of the NALC, as defined in Article 2, Section 1A, excluding retirees, OWCP departees, and non-letter carrier regular members, as shown by the records of the National Secretary Treasurer as of 90 days prior to the date of the proposed agreement is reached. The ballot shall provide only for the acceptance or rejection of the entire proposed agreement. The ballot committee shall be called to national headquarters by the national president, commencing with the conclusion of negotiations for the sole purposes of monitoring and observing the dispatch, receipt, and tabulation of the ratification ballot, and to determine the validity of challenged ballots and of any objections to the conduct of the election. Membership, acceptance, or rejection of a proposed national agreement shall be by majority of valid ballots returned by the voters. When such majority votes to accept a proposed agreement, no other action shall be required of the union membership. Suitable and timely notice of such results shall be made and certified to the membership by the ballot committee through the postal record and or the NALC bulletin. When a majority of valid ballots returned by the voters rejects the proposed agreement, the ballot committee shall A. cause suitable and timely notice of such results to be furnished and certified to the membership through the pages of the postal record and or the NALC bulletin, and B, furnish and certify the same information to the national president. When the majority of total votes cast is for rejection, the NALC negotiator shall inform the USPS and reopen negotiations within 5 days after the vote is tallied. If negotiations are not reopened, the NALC negotiator shall determine if there will be binding arbitration, an immediate work stoppage, or a designated job action. All right, so here's what we were talking about earlier. We could be told to strike. That would be wild. We'll cross that bridge if we come to it. Let's get ourselves a national agreement first, a tentative agreement. If negotiations are reopened, they will not exceed a period of 15 calendar days, at which time a second ballot shall be mailed to each member for ratification or rejection. If the membership rejects this second ballot, then the national president will determine if there will be binding arbitration, an immediate work stoppage, or a designated job action. So we still have the option to go to arbitration. It's something that Renfro has been talking about for a long time. And the idea behind arbitration is that when you've reached an impasse and you're not making progress in your negotiations, you go to arbitration and you let a third party hash it out. And it's kind of wild to me that that hasn't happened yet. Clearly, we have had this impasse for a long time. We've had the arbitrator for a long time, and yet this step is not being taken. And, dude, there better be a hell of a contract by the time this is all done. And honestly, even if there is, it's unlikely I would vote for Renfro. It's essentially guaranteed I would not vote for him again. In the case of a nationally sanctioned work stop, Section 2. In the case of a nationally sanctioned work stoppage, the president shall issue no recall to work until a full and unconditional amnesty is granted to all participants in that work stoppage. So there you go, guys. We are breaking the law if we go on strike. And so Renfro would have to negotiate amnesty where, okay, we'll come back to work, but none of us are going to go to jail. So that's what's covered here. And if it's not the case, then we're not coming back to work. You know, my buddy who's a cop, who I mentioned earlier, or no, it was in my postal stand-up episode, which is a separate podcast that I host. Anyway, I was asking him, like, dude, if we went on strike, would you arrest letter carriers for picketing? And he's like, no way would I arrest letter carriers. Like, no cop. That's a bad look, you know, for the police department to be out there arresting letter carriers who are on strike. But it is a concern, and maybe the postal inspectors would come and arrest us. You know, hopefully we just get a good national agreement. That seems like the best way to handle this. Section 3. Any national collective bargaining agreement entered into between the NALC and USPS shall be ratified by the regular members who shall be non-supervisory employees in the Postal Service. Article 17, short, might as well read that one too. Litigation. Section 1. The National Association is authorized upon affirmative vote of the Executive Council to pay all the expenses for investigating services, employment of counsel, and other necessary expenditure in any cause, matters, case, or cases where an officer, representative, employee, agent, or one charged with acting in behalf of the National Association is charged with any violation or violations of any law or is sued in any civil actions with respect to any matter arising out of their official duties, except if such officer, representative, employee, or agent is charged with a breach of his trust to the National Association or any subordinate body or member thereof, in which event they may be indemnified if the action is terminated favorably to them. So, if you're a branch president and you get sued for doing your duty as a branch president, the NALC could pay your legal bills. But if you get sued because you are failing to do your job as a branch president, then they could disavow you and say, hey, man, you're on your own. But then if you get found not guilty, then they could come in and pay you for your money after the fact. Reimburse you for that after the fact. Section 2. Neither the National Association nor any of its officers shall be responsible or liable for the wrongful or unlawful acts of any branch or state association, or officers, members, or agents thereof, except where the National Association or its officers have actually participated in or actually authorized such acts, or have ratified such acts after actual knowledge thereof. Section 3. No branch shall institute litigation in any court against the United States Postal Service or any successor organization to enforce, set aside, or declare the proper interpretation of any provision of a national agreement between the association and the USPS, except with the written approval of the national president. So yeah, if the post office is going to be sued, the NALC wants control over that, and that seems reasonable. All right, the next Article 18 is trusteeship, and that one, I think that'll be a good place to pick up for for next time. Actually, you know what? I forget it. I'm going to read it. I want to get through this because I want to get on to other things. All right. Article 18, trusteeship. Section 1, A, if the president has or receives... Oh, and incidentally, in our last episode, we talked about, or it was laid out that these rules about being a trustee apply to the president. Like, it was part of the president's duties that he's got to do all the stuff listed under trusteeship. All right, Section 1A. If the president has or receives information which leads them to believe that any of the officers of a branch or other subordinate body are dishonest or incompetent, or that such organizations are not being conducted in accordance with the Constitution and laws of the National Association, or for the benefit of its members, or are being conducted in such a manner as to jeopardize the interests of the National Association or its subordinate bodies, or if the president believes that such action is necessary for the purpose of correcting corruption or financial malpractice, assuring the performance of collective bargaining agreements or other duties of a bargaining representative, restoring democratic procedures, or otherwise carrying out legitimate objectives of such subordinate body, the president may, upon the filing of charges, appoint a trustee to take charge and control, charge of and control the affairs of such branch or other subordinate body with the power set forth in Section 2 hereof. Provided, however, that before the appointment of such a trustee, the president shall set a time and place for hearing of the charges before a hearing officer appointed for the purpose of determining whether such trustee shall be appointed, unless, in the judgment of the president, an emergency situation exists within the branch or other subordinate body, in which event the trustee may be appointed prior to such hearing, but such hearing shall then commence within 20 days, and a decision shall be made by the president within 60 days after the appointment of the trustee as to whether the trusteeship should be continued. Dude, that was all one sentence. Whoever's in charge of the commas and the semicolons in this sentence, they should be put in charge of doing that for the national agreement. Because, man, that was a hell of a sentence. Moving on. In either event, subsequent procedures shall be governed by Section 3 hereof. B. The president shall have the power, when in their judgment it is appropriate, to remove the trustee the president has appointed and to appoint a different trustee in their stead. If the president exercises this power, they shall so notify in writing the new trustee, the replaced trustee, and the branch or subordinate body involved. The officers who conduct the hearing pursuant to Section 3 hereof shall not be eligible to be a trustee of that branch or subordinate body. Section 2A. The trustee shall be authorized and empowered to take full charge of the affairs of the branch or other subordinate body, to remove any or all officers and appoint temporary officers at any time during their trusteeship, and to take such other action as in their judgment is necessary for the preservation of the branch or other subordinate body and its interests. The terms of office of officers so removed shall terminate as of the date of removal, unless they are otherwise absolved. The trustee shall report from time to time on the affairs and transactions of the branch or other subordinate body to the president. Their acts shall be subject to the supervision of the president. The president may remove trustees at any time and may appoint successor trustees. You know, all of this gets me thinking about the possibility of how to respond to the current failings in my branch, like not abiding by items in our local memorandum, not abiding by items in our bylaws, not doing the duties that are required of them in our bylaws. I guess this, at least in theory, is a course of action that could be taken. You know, what's messed up is, like, you'd like to think you bring this to the attention of the officers of your branch, and they're like, oh yeah, we, you know, thanks for letting me know. We need to get that in line. Like, dude, that happens to me at my own station where, like, you know, I recently made a mistake in granting an opt, and somebody brought it to my attention, and they're like, hey, you know, I'm sorry to, like, call you out. I'm like, no, dude, I want the ops to be correct. Please let me know so that I can fix it. And it's just wild to me that that is not the mentality that is currently in place at our branch. Anyway, Moving on. B, the removed officers shall turn over all monies, books, and properties of the branch or other subordinate body to the trustee, who must receipt for the same. C, temporary officers and trustees must be members in good standing of the National Association. They must give bonds for the faithful discharge of their duties, satisfactory to whoever appointed them, which shall not be less than the amount of money they are apt to handle. Section 3. In all cases, a copy of the charges, together with a notice setting the time and place of hearing, including the name of the hearing officer who shall not be a member of the branch or subordinate body involved, or the trustee, shall be served on the branch or other subordinate body at least 10 days, Sundays and holidays included, prior to the hearings by serving either the president, the financial secretary, or any two members of the executive council of the branch or other subordinate body, personally or by registered or certified mail. B. The hearing officer shall make their report and recommendations to the president within 10 days after the hearing or date of receipt of the transcript, and the president shall make their decision within 10 days of receipt of the report and recommendations, and such decision shall be immediately communicated to the branch or other subordinate body involved. Appeals from such decision may be taken to the Executive Council within 30 days upon the record made before the hearing officer, provided, however, that the decisions of the president shall be effective for all purposes during this pendency or during the pendency of such appeal. Appeal from the Executive Council's decision may be taken to the convention in accordance with Article 11, Section 4. C. The trustee shall make a report to the president at least every 3 months on the operation of the trusteeship. Can you hear Annie scratching in the background, making a nest on the bed? I hope that comes through. Yeah, she's ready to get comfortable. Let me help her out. Hold on just a sec. All right, Annie is all hooked up. The comforter is soft, but it's not as soft as the sheets underneath. And so she will just pull and pull at the comforter. So I just went and folded it back for her. So now she's all snuggled in. It's so adorable. I don't remember. Oh, let me just pick up at C again. The trustee shall make a report to the president at least every 3 months on the operation of the trusteeship, either upon their own motion or upon a petition filed by a member or members of the branch or other subordinate body for the restoration of self-government. The president may, in their discretion, accord a hearing to be held on the petition before the president or their representative upon proper notice. A decision shall be rendered within 60 days of such hearing. No such petition shall be entertained, however, prior to 6 months after the appointment of the trustee. So if your branch blows it and they got to bring a trustee in, they're in there for at least 6 months. And finally, the end of Article 18, we have D. If the president determines either upon their own motion or after hearing that self-government should be restored, the trustee shall direct nomination and election of officers at such time and place as the trustee determines. Provisions of the Constitution of the branch or any subordinate body's rules and bylaws to the contrary notwithstanding. And thus ends Article 18. Dude, we got through a lot of articles today. So, good job, us. Thanks for listening, and we will keep up the good work. Catch you guys next time.